Okay, Rabbi, so we're on the Mishnah on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. And the Mishnah deals with the case of an individual who's condemned in a Beis Din and then he ran away. They were able to get him back, and the question is, do they have to retry him or not? Do you need a retrial in the case of someone who flees from Beis Din and we get him back into Beis Din? So the Mishnah establishes the following rules. Misha Nigmar Dino. So in this case, there was a Gemar Din for death. He was condemned for death. Ubarach, and then he ran away. Balifnei also Bezdin. In the first case, they got him back to the same Bezdin where he was tried and condemned. Is Ein Sosin as Dino. There's no need to begin the judgment process again. Everything is set in stone. Everything is complete, and we put him to death. Then the Mishnah goes on to say that a similar halach applies, kol makom sheyamdu shnayim viyomru, whenever we have a case where two witnesses testify in front of a Beis Din, me'idin anu bishploni, we can testify about this person, shenigmar dino, he was condemned to death, be'Beis Din shalploni, in a court which was presided over by so-and-so, uploni uploni edov. And it's interesting, the Mishnah requires that they name the Edim. Okay, they're not the Edim. They just testify that they witnessed the condemnation of Beis Din, the Gemara Din. But they can testify who the Edim are. We have to see exactly why they have to tell us who the Edim are. Harei zei hari. We can put him to death based on this Edus. And once again, there's no need for a retrial. So let's just summarize what we know. If we get back the person in the original Beis Din, correct? And in the original Beis Din, they know, nobody has to tell them or testify that this individual was condemned to death. I mean, they themselves condemned this, the same identical Beis Din. Then we put him to death, without further ado. However, if two witnesses come in front of a Beis Din and they tell us about a Gemara Din that took place in a different Beis Din, so they're showing up in Beis Din B, telling us a story about what happened in Beis Din A, in that case, they have to testify about two things. Number one, who was that Beis Din, the makeup of the Beis Din, or at least one of the Dayanim. It says Ploni for Ploni, it says Ploni, which means one of the Dayanim. But they also have to testify about who the Edim were. Why do they have to testify about who the Edim were? So the answer is, and this is explained, you know, around the old-fashioned Mishnayos, I don't know if we have one here, the old set of Mishnayos, the Ayin Beis. So they have the Tosfos Yontif. He's one of the two super commentaries. There are three super commentaries on the old Mishnayos. Those of you who remember these Mishnayos, you're really dating yourself because the Kahati Mishnayos have just taken over. But there's the Tosfos Yontif, there's the Bar Tanura, and there's the Yochanan Boaz on the bottom, also called the Teferes Yisrael. So the Tosfos Yontif says on this Mishnah that the reason why it's critical that these Edim testify who the Edim were, right? Who were the Edim who testified in the first case, is because we're not sure, we can't be certain that there's no possibility. That's a double negative. We can't be certain that there's no possibility. Let's say it in the positive way. There is a possibility of Hazama. But the reason I said it in the negative way is because if there was Hazama, how is it that these Edom don't know about it? But the answer is that maybe there wasn't time for Hazama. Maybe the word didn't get out. Because again, you remember that Hazama takes place when? After Gemara Din. So this kind of Edom we're testifying here, we'll call it in Beis Din B, about what happened in Beis Din A, they have to somehow add another piece to their testimony before we can put this condemned criminal to death. We have to have the possibility, and this is true for every condemnation, following the condemnation, there has to be some sort of possibility of Hazama. Meaning the word has to get out that so-and-so was condemned to death based on the testimony of these two Edim that testified on a crime that they claim took place on such and such a date, at such and such a time, in such and such a place. Once we know that the word is out, Again, we don't have the details here, exactly how long we have to wait. There are a lot of questions that are probably flooding your mind, as they are mine. But given the fact that there's some reasonable period of time which we wait, let's say we give it a day or so, and nobody comes to be mazel these two Edom, then we assume that these Edom are Edom Ksherim. We have no reason to assume otherwise. The possibility of Hazama took place existed, and it was no Hazama. So we'll put the criminal to death. In this case, however, since there was never a condemnation in this Bezdin, because again we're in Bezdin B, not in the original Bezdin A where the condemnation took place, therefore we have to know that in Bezdin B there's some sort of period or system, a mechanical system in which the word has to get out that so-and-so testified about a crime that took place in such a place, such a time, and the criminal is about to be put to death. Is there anyone, if you have any azoma, say it now. If not, forever hold your peace, kind of thing. So, and the Rashash actually embellishes this Tosfos Yontif. He adds another point. He says it's not enough, according to Tosfos Yontif, that they just simply testify who the Edim were. If you read the Mishnah on a superficial level, the first glance reading would lead you to the impression that all the Edim have to testify is Reuven and Shimon were the Edim in this case. No, that's not enough. The fact that Reuven and Shimon were the Edim doesn't tell any potential Hazama people that they should come forward with Hazama. They have to mention that these two Edim testified on a crime that took place at such and such a time in such and such a place. That's what the Rashash here expands upon on this Mishnah.
The two Edim who are coming to testify about the case that happened in the place, do they also have to deal with Hazama?
Yes, for sure. They too have to be on Hazama. They have to testify at such and such a time, in such a Beznin, located here, we witnessed a procedure, a trial, that led to the condemnation of the Nidah. What do you say?
They have to be at the trial.
I don't know if they have to be at the trial. They have to be at the Gemar Din.
Okay.
They don't have to know all the details.
Gemar Din.
They have to be at the Gemar Din. Now, here there's a very important Rambam that I wanted to call to your attention. The Rambam says a pella of a chiddush here. We'll have to see how he came to this conclusion. The Rambam says that this halacha that the Mishnah is formulating only applies to a rotzeach situation, only to a murder trial. There are many other cases which are capital in nature, many other crimes that engender a capital punishment. Right? There's Chil Shabbos and there's Be'ilus Arayus and so forth and so on. He says in those cases the din is different. And here's the Lashon HaRambam. The Rambam says, "Bishar chayve mises bezdin, I efshal lechayvo ad sheyavo ha'edim rishonim sheheidu olav mitchila." We cannot put a condemned criminal to death in Bezdin B based on the edus that testifies about the Gemara din in Bezdin A, with the only exception of Edi Ritzicha. We have to understand why. But let's just get the facts on the ground. What the Mishnah is addressing here is Edei Ritzicha. And oddly enough, this is going to be a chumra, so to speak, in Edei Ritzicha, that in Edei Ritzicha, we don't need the original Edom to come into this Bezdin where he's going to be executed. All we need is Edom who testify about the Edus that took place in the original Bezdin. But in every other capital crime, says the Rambam, you will require that the Edom themselves be here in this Bezdin. Why is that so? So to understand that, we have to introduce a halacha, I don't know if you're familiar with, called Yad Edim Tia Bo Barishona. The Torah tells us that when a criminal is executed, the Edim themselves have to put him to death. What that means exactly, for example, in Skila, maybe they do the pushing and then we do the rock throw. I mean, again, but the initial process that leads to the death of the condemned criminal is done by the Edim themselves. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin the following. This is Masechta Sanhedrin Daf Mem Hei Amid Beis. And the Gemara says that according to Shmuel, the din of Yad Edim Tia Bo Barishona La Miso is Li'ikuva. It's absolutely indispensable. You can't do it without it. There's no way of putting a condemned criminal to death without the Edim. And therefore Shmuel says, this is an unbelievable halacha, that if the Edim have no arms, that's called Nikta Yedeim, then the criminal gets off the hook. Now what that means, he gets off the hook, I don't know exactly. You know, there may be other technical ways that we can deal with this criminal. You know, we don't have exactly a jail sentence, but we have something very similar. It's called Machnisin Asol Kippah and so forth and so on. But anyway, in principle, we cannot put him to death without literally the Edim's arms, you know, they are actually beginning the process of Misa. Correct? That's what it says in Shmuel. Okay? So wait a second, hold on. He says the following. The Gemara asks the following kasha. Our Mishnah says that if the Gemara in Sanhedrin Hey asks a kash from our Mishnah here in Makas Daf Zayin, the Mishnah says that if two Edim come and testify that they witnessed the Gemara Din in the first place, then we can put them to death. Well, where are the Edim over here? That's against Shmuel. So Shmuel answers that the Mishnah is talking about a case where the Edim Harishonim Heim Elu Shebayim Atalahoyed Shedigmar Dino Mikodim Lechen. That these two Edim are the same Edim who testified in the first Bezdin. So the Gemara asks, how could Shmuel say such a thing? That this din is Ma'akev? We find by Rotseach that the Gemara says, Im Efshal Amiso B'Misa K'suvabo Rashoim L'Amiso B'Chol Misa. The Gemara says that in the case of Ritzicha, if it's impossible to put him to death in that Misa which the Torah prescribes for Rotzeach, which is Saif, so then we'll find a different way of putting him to death. So the Gemara says that you see that it's not absolutely required that we put him to death exactly in that way. And the Gemara says that that's a separate halacha in Rotzeach. And the Gemara has what's called Shnei Ksuvim Habayim Kechanei Melamdim to establish that from Rotzeach we don't derive it for other Mises Bezdin. So there's a separate halacha in Ritzicha that the laws that have to be fulfilled and implemented in the execution of the murderer are Lechatchila. These are Lechatchila laws. But if we cannot fulfill them lechatchila the way that we have to, then there's a fallback position. But the Eved, we can put the murderer to death without those technical conditions being fulfilled. And one of those technical conditions that have to be fulfilled is Yad Ha'edim Tia Bo Rishona. So in the Efshal Amiso B'Misa Ksuva Bo B'Misa Naso B'Misa Cheres, and that applies even in the case where Edim are not available to put him to death. And therefore, what Shmuel finally establishes at the end of this sugya is that the reason why in our Mishnah the original two Edim do not have to be in Bezdin, nor do we require that the original two Edim are the ones who are testifying here, because the original two Edim only have to be named, they have to be identified, but they don't have to actually be here in front of Bezdin. That turns out to be a unique halach in Ritzicha. And Rabosai, as we go through our discussion today, I want you to keep a scorecard, so to speak. How often do we find halachos that are stricter and the Torah is more machmir in Ritzicha than in other Mises Bezdin? For example, what do the Edom have to see in order to put someone to death in other capital crimes? Or, for example, we might find that in the case of Ritzicha, the Torah is going to require that we do everything that we have to do to investigate the Edim and to interrogate the Edim, but we're not going to go beyond that. We're not going to exceed beyond the requirements in order to trip up the Edim. In other words, v'shaftu edim v'tzilu'ed applies in general across the board for all capital punishments, but when it comes to Ritzicha, when there's a potential Rotzeach who's being condemned or at least accused in a Beis Din, we're going to see that the laws that apply to Rotzeach until we finally, until we finally do away with the Rotzeach, what's the word, till we snub him out, whatever the word is, the laws become almost lenient.
But the Atzilut HaEilah is talking specifically about murder.
Correct, but
accidental murder.
But the kalachomer is that if he tzilu edu applies to a murderer, how much more so that it applies to other cases? Because in Ritzicha we're going to be more machmir in the sense against the nidon. And here's one example, that if we cannot fulfill the mitzvah of Yad HaEdim Tia Bo Berishona, and we have two Edim testifying that they heard a murderer condemned in another Bezdin, and they can name the Edim, but they can't bring the Edim in front of the Bezdin, we'll put the murderer to death. And watch as we go along, we're going to see a string of chumras that are going to apply because we can't tolerate murder. And I want you to give some thought to it as we go along. Why is it that you could have, let's say, a list of 5 different capital crimes, and you're going to be more, how should I say, motivated in one of those 5, namely in murder, to put the criminal, in this case the murderer, to death, than in the other 4 cases? Again, I'm just making up a number. The number is not 4, but I'm just saying. Why is that so? Okay, I mean, obviously the precious nature of life is at stake here, because we have to get the word out that we don't tolerate murders. You know, Shvichas Dom is not to be...
Is there a time limit?
So that's why I mentioned before, what we have to do now, again, that's more Masechtas on the edge of the Makkos, is really study exactly these details. What are the time limitations? How long after the trial took place can we still put the murderer to death? Let's say he was a fugitive for a year or 10 years. And how long of a period of time do we need to wait for the word to get out so that Edom Zomer could possibly come in? That's all in Masechta Sanhedrin. But I just wanted to point out to you that even though Blagavi Rotzeh is Halach of Yad Edom Tia Bov Rishona, but it's not Likuva, and we can put him to death even without the original Edom.
You mentioned that the two Edom who originally testified could be the ones that come to...
Right, that is a possibility. Right.
Why is that possible? Because aren't they like Beit Yanim? Like they're testifying about their own testimony in an earlier thing.
Ah, well, because they're not testifying about themselves, right? I mean, every aid really testifies about himself in the sense that he says, "I was there on such a day, such a time to see the crime." That's okay because the testimony is relevant to someone else. And on the contrary, here by testifying that we already gave our aid this in a previous bezdin, they're exposing themselves to hazama. So that's not considered no ger be'edus. The Mishnah continues, Sanhedrin. Now, the word Sanhedrin means 2 things. It means a bezin of 23 judges. It could also mean what's called Sanhedrin Agdola, a bezin of 71. In our context, we're talking about a bezin of 23. Sanhedrin oheges ba'aretz ubechutzlaretz. In other words, you might have thought that the law of Sanhedrin and the power, the authority of Sanhedrin to establish a Beis Din of 23 only applies in Eretz Yisrael. And the Mishnah comes to tell us, no, that even though the Pasuk says, this is in Dvarim Yud Zayin, lebilti shmoa el hakohen, so with regard to Sanhedrin, the Torah says that we're going to put, in this case, Zakeh Mamre, who rebels against the Sanhedrin, to death, because Lebilti Shmoel HaKohen, HaShofet, it says in the end of the post, but it mentions a Kohen, and we can derive from the word Kohen that we're talking about a Kohen who works in the Beis HaMikdash and brings Karbonis on the Mizbeach. And therefore you would think that Sanhedrin could only apply when is a Beis HaMikdash? And in Eretz Yisrael, where the halach of Kedushas Migdash applies, but not in Chutz Laretz, and the Mishnah says, no, that pasuk of Levilti Shmoel HaKohen only applies to a Sanhedrin Agdola. Sanhedrin Agdola only applies in Eretz Yisrael, that's the 71 elders, and only where? Does anybody know where the Sanhedrin was located? Exactly, the Lishkas HaGozes. If the Beis Din is outside of the Lishkas HaGozes, they lose their status, their authority as a Beis Din, as a Sanhedrin HaGdol. They can serve as a Sanhedrin Ketana, but those special functions that can only be achieved by the Sanhedrin HaGdola, that requires Lishkas HaGozes. However, once we drop down to the next level of Sanhedrin, which is called Sanhedrin Ketana of 23 judges, not only are they sitting located outside of Lishkas HaGozes, they're even outside of Eretz Yisrael. And that's the chiddush of our Mishnah, that we shouldn't make a mistake that since it says HaKohen, Vilti Shmuel HaKohen, that therefore even Sanhedrin HaKetana of 23 judges have to preside in Eretz Yisrael. They could be even in Chutz Laretz. The question that we want to ask is there any difference in halacha between a Sanhedrin of 23 in Eretz Yisrael and a Sanhedrin of 23 outside of Eretz Yisrael? In both cases, a Sanhedrin has the authority, the power to condemn a criminal to death. So as far as Mises Beis Din is concerned, as far as Dini Nefashos, every Sanhedrin, no matter where they're located on the face of the earth, they have that power. But we will see, Amir Tzashem, that there is a slight difference between Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael and Sanhedrin in Chutz Laretz. The Kos Yeshuos is one of the super commentaries on Shas, wants to know why this discussion about Sanhedrin is here in this Mishnah. It should belong really to the Sefta Sanhedrin. You want to know where Sanhedrin Ogeges, Eretz Yisrael, Chutz Laretz? So the answer is that the Gemara later on is going to ask a stira between one Mishnah and the other, and the answer is going to be that one is talking about Eretz Yisrael, one is talking about Chutz Laretz. That's where we're going to see a slight difference between the two. So therefore, the Mishnah has to first establish that there is such an institution as Sanhedrin and Chutz Laretz. Now, I don't know if any of you here may have seen that I gave a title to tonight's shiur. That's only if you get our emails, but it's not relevant. I try to give a title in case anyone sees it and might be tempted to come. So the title for tonight's shiur is, what is the hashkafa of the halacha on capital punishment? Do we really want to put criminals to death? And what I had in mind was the second part of our mission. The Sefer of our Mishnah says the following. Sanhedrin ha-horeges echad b'shavua. Anybody know what the word shavua means here?
7 years.
Yeah, once in 7 years. A Sanhedrin that puts a criminal to death once in 7 years, nikreis choblanit. It's called a mechabeles, a mashchisa. This is a very destructive and aggressive kind of a Sanhedrin. Now, it's a little bit strange to me because I would ask the following question. Is it so that a Sanhedrin that puts a person to death once every 7 years, what are we accusing them of? You're calling them a chovlanit, that's pretty heavy. I mean, they didn't do... I don't know, it means they weren't choker v'dorish the eidim. What was exactly lacking in this Beis Din? So Enoch Hinami, the Tiferes Yisrael, that I told you is one of the super commentaries on the Mishnayos, he claims that such a Beis Din that puts to death a criminal on the average of every 7 year cycle is a choblanit, because apparently they did not do the proper drishas for chakirs. I find that very, very difficult. The Ben Yehoyada, that's a Sephardic Achron who writes usually on Agadah, but he also has some interesting comments on Halacha. Here he says something which, on the one hand, it's almost an Agadic statement. You know, if I would say this in Shia, my Rebbe would probably throw me out. But the reason I mention it is because I'm very pained by this Mishnah. I'm sort of desperate. I don't like the Tiferes Yisrael's pshat that we should accuse this Sanhedrin of not fulfilling their requirements of doing a proper investigation, interrogation of the Eidim. So the Ben Yehoyada says the following, that Sanhedrin has a double function. Not only are they responsible to try the cases and the criminals and put them to death if need be, they also are responsible to pray through very strong and profound tefillos that in their generation there should be no need to put anyone to death. that these kinds of crimes should not be committed by the generation of Jews. And if this Beis Din has put someone to death 1 7-year period and then another 7-year period, then they have not fulfilled their duty to be mispalel on behalf of their generation. A similar concept will come later on in the second parak of Makkos. The Gemara is going to ask, but they're talking to an agadita, why is it that a rotzeach leaves, when does he go free from the Yermiklot? At the Kohen Gadol dies. Why should he be, and his mother, the Gemara says, is praying for the Kohen Gadol to die. You know, wow, let's hope he drops dead so that my son could go free and come home from the Yermiklot. So the Gemara says, according to one opinion, because the Kohen Gadol did not pray on behalf of the generation, had he done so, this Ritzicha B'Shogeg would never have taken place. Again, when we get to that sugi, we'll have a lot to think about. There are a myriad of questions that have to be answered. But the Gemara says that the Kohen Gadol is responsible for praying on behalf of the generation. The Ben Yehoyada, by process of analogy, again, it's a stretch, wants to apply the same responsibility of prayer to the Sanhedrin. The members of the Sanhedrin are the leaders of the generation, and no less than the Kohen Gadol, they are responsible to prevent these kinds of criminal acts from taking place. How could they have prevented it? The answer is through tefillah.
And just tefillah, but also through education.
Absolutely. Alan, you took the words out of my mouth.
When you have the town who's closest to the...
Right, and the elders are right. Right, the Gemara says in Sotah maybe that he came and they didn't treat him and they sent him out without Leviat. Yeah, I think you're 100% right. The word tefillah here in the Ben Yehoyada is a code word for any kind of process of hashpah, of influence. These are the leaders of the generation. How could this be happening in their generation? The Gemara is going to say later on that somebody committed a murder in close proximity to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had to do tshuva his whole life because the very fact that it happened in his proximity indicates some level of guilt by default that he could have somehow had the impact that this criminal act wouldn't have happened. But be that as it may, the Mishnah establishes once in 7 years, correct? Now here's the question I want to ask you. Let's assume that Beis Din put someone to death, just for argument's sake, again, this is a theoretical question, on the first day of the first of the 7 years. Correct? Now, what would be if I count 7 years and they put someone to death on the first day of the 8th year. Is there any difference between that scenario and a scenario in which they would put someone to death on the last day of the 7th year? Does the fact that we already began the 8th year, does that change anything? Again, let's read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Sanhedrin ha-horeges Adam Echad b'shavua, in 7 years. Well, if we're already into the 8th year, then it's not a choblanit. If, again, watch this. If,
why do you see the someone dying?
Okay, here's the question I want to ask you, Rabbi. Why didn't the Mishnah just say the following? You know who's a choblanit? A bezdin that puts to death 2 criminals within 7 years. Why does the Mishnah use this strange language, Echad b'shavua? If it was Echad b'shavua, and then the next time they put someone to death was in a different shavua, then they're not a choblanit, correct? So why not just say very simply, that you know who's a choblanit? A Beis Din that put to death 2 criminals within 7 years. And an afkamina would be, if the Mishnah would have said that the choblanit is a Beis Din that put to death two criminals within 7 years, pamayim b'toch shavua, then if the second execution took place on the first day of the 8th year, then they're not called a choblanit.
So what?
Is there an opinion to be a Polonian or not?
I don't know. That's an excellent question. But again, let's just focus your attention for 1 minute on who qualifies as a Chovanim. I gave you the following scenario. The second condemnation and execution took place on the first day of the eighth year. If the Mishnah theoretically would have said the following: a chavlanit is a beznet put to death two criminals within 7 years. Pamayim betoch shavua, shtei pamayim toch shavua. What would be the deal in that case? Are they a chavlanit or not? No, because the second execution was not within a 7 year period. But the Mishnah doesn't say that. The Mishnah says echad b'shavua. Echad b'shavua means once in 7 years.
It's an average, no? It's not too exaggerated.
So what would... No, but I'm just asking, what would be in a case where they put the criminal to death on the first of the eighth year? Would they be a koblanit?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is yes.
Because of the strange language?
Because of the strange language. Had the Mishnah said, well, you're a koblanit because you excessively put people to death twice in a shavua, then, since they waited, so to speak, until the beginning of the eighth year, they would not be considered qualified as a chavlanit. But the Mishnah wants to say is that within a 7 year period, so that the first day of the eighth year is still within the 7 year period, and therefore you'd still be a chavlanit. Now it sounds like we're splitting hairs, because how frequently could such a case come up? But nevertheless, it justifies the use of the language of echad bishavua, meaning you cannot put two people to death within this period of time, but the Mishnah says it in such a way that the second execution would have had to take place after the 7 year period ended. That's the way the Mishnah is saying it. Not two within 7 years, but the second one took place and the 7 year period hasn't passed by. So if I tick the clock off from the first execution to the first day of the eighth year, I still have two executions within a 7 year block. Whereas if I would have said two within 7 years, then I would count up 7 years, and the first day of the eighth year would not be considered a chovlanit. Now you ask me, what's the nafkamina calling someone a chovlanit? I don't know. If I had chutzpah, I would tell you that such a Sanhedrin has to be replaced. But I haven't found anyone yet who says such a thing.
It's just a generalization the Mishnah is making, that we try to get people off.
Okay, take you up on your offer from before.
Yeah.
Go ahead. This one. Yeah, go ahead.
Try to get people off. And therefore, in the best thing that death, as Rabbi Akiva is going to say, 70 years.
Right.
You know, we don't do that. Jewish courts don't kill people.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm confused about the... You know, I'm confused about the way the Mishnah formulates it.
Well, it's also strange that it doesn't have a population size. Like, I would expect, like, if you're a small town, you're killing, you know, a population of 100, you're killing once every 20 years, that sounds pretty murderous to me. It's like, oh, no, the Benson of, you know, 10 million people kills, you know, once a year, that's pretty small.
Right, right, and we're going to see later on that, at least in Eretz Yisrael, There are different kinds of Sanhedrin, right? There's Sanhedrin in a city, there's Sanhedrin in what's called a Pelach, which is more of a district. So obviously the dinim should change depending upon how great of a jurisdiction they have.
Sanhedrin doing Sardinia.
What do you say?
Sardinia, with the mafia.
Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer Echad Lishivim Shana. If they put to death more than one person in a period of 70 years, then that's called a choblanit. Rabbi Taf, Rabbi Akiva Omrim, Ilu Hayinu B'Sanhedrin, if we would have served on Sanhedrin at the time when they put people to death, when capital punishment was still in place, Lo Neherag Adam Me'ol. And the Gemara is going to explain that their interrogation of the Eidim was so thorough and so aggressive that at the end of the day they would definitely come up with some sort of hakhasha between the Eidim, and therefore they would not be able to put any criminal to death. Now first I want to ask you one question. What does this mean, Ilu Hayinu v'Sanhedrin? That's not true historically. Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva were members of Sanhedrin. But the answer is that they were members of Sanhedrin at a time when the execution process could not take place. And why is that? Even though the Beis HaMikdash stood, and therefore the Sanhedrin could be sitting theoretically in the Lishkas HaGos outside of the Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Kiva, after all, was alive at the time of the Churban. But nevertheless, the Gemara tells us in Masechta Ksuvos and also in Masechta Bava Basra that 40 years before the Churban, the Sanhedrin went into Golos. In other words, the process of destruction took place in stages. And Sanhedrin ceased to function with the ability to put people to death because they were no longer in the Lishkas HaGos already 40 years before the Churban. And that's what Rabbi Akiva says over here, that Ilu Hayinu v'Sanhedrin, meaning not that I wasn't in a Sanhedrin, but if I were to sit in a Sanhedrin that had the power of Dini Nefashos, because we sat in the Lishkas HaGozes, then Lo Nerag Adam Me'ol. Okay? That's what we have over here.
Didn't you say that both in Bithlar Eretz and Eretz Yisrael was 23 you could? They were separated to that far that they weren't even with?
Well, you're asking a different question. Okay, so they can't function as a Sanhedrin Agdola, but let them function under the capacity of a different Sanhedrin.
And it's still killed people, right. So.
Yeah, but at this point in time, Rabbi Akiva is part of a unit called Sanhedrin. You know, Sanhedrin Agdola. Now look at the harsh response to this comment of Rabbi Tarfon Rabbi Akiva on the part of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Shingam Lil Omer Af Haim in plural, referring to both Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, Marvim Shofchei Domim B'Yisrael. What is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's point over here? What rubs him the wrong way about Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon boasting that they would never put a person to death?
They don't kill murderers.
That what?
They wouldn't kill murderers. They wouldn't. They would let murderers go loose. Yeah.
Right. And you know why? Because there's no deterrent. The death penalty functions more than anything else. I would put punishment over secondary, primarily as a deterrent to inhibit murder. You have to know what's hanging over your head. So the obvious question is, why is Rav Shimon Gamliel only upset with Marvim Shofchei Domim v'Yisrael? After all, if you go back to Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, they said, Lo Neherag Adam Yolam. And the Gemara is going to go through a whole slew of different kinds of capital crimes and figure out in each case how Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon would trip up the Edom in such a way that guarantee that he would exonerate the accused. So we're not just limited to Shofchei Domim. But the concern is about Shpichas Dom. And this comes back to our original point where we said that we'll put someone to death even without Yad Ha'edim Tiyabo Barishona, and even if we can't execute it with the Misa that he's supposed to get, there's a fallback position, we'll put him to death in a different Misa. We are being very, very careful to put to death a murderer because that serves as a deterrent to murder. And even though putting to death an Oved Avodah Zarah will be a deterrent against Avodah Zarah, and even though putting to death a person who violates Gilui Arayos or Shabbos and so on would be a deterrent against those criminals and those crimes, but nevertheless the worst of all crimes is murder. And the reason for that is obvious, because all the other crimes that we mentioned are, let's call them, Bein Adam LaMakom. The Gemara uses the term Rala Shamayim. What's unique about this capital punishment, this capital crime of Shvichas Domim, is that it's not only Rala Shamayim, it's Rala Bris. It's a double whammy in a sense. We should really kill the guy twice. We should kill him once because of the Avera of Bein Adam LaMakom, Lo Sirtzach, and a second time because of the Bein Adam LaMakom, Lo Chavero, that he took human life. That situation is so intolerable that Rav Shimon Gamliel feels that you have to do what you have to do. Again, Vitzilu Eidah, You're going to have to investigate the Eidim very, very carefully. But once you are convinced, despite all the questions that we'll see, the Rebbe Kiva is going to interrogate the Eidim, which is going above and beyond the interrogations that we need. We are convinced that the Eidim are telling a very solid story over here. There are no flaws in the story. Then says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, put him to death. There's no room for exceeding what word can I use? Compassion when it comes to this powerful tool that the Torah commanded us to use in the case of Shlichus Dam. Now you'll ask about Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfin, what opinion do they have? Lo haya adam nerag mi'olam. I don't know. I guess in the balance between compassion for the accused and doing whatever we can to Yitzilu Eidim, and the possible deterrent of setting the record straight about how severe and how serious and how scary it is to contemplate murder because of the repercussions, they tip the scale in favor of compassion. The Tiferes Yisrael here on the Mishnayos asks the following question. He says, I don't understand. What bothers Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? Did Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon mean to say that when we catch the Eidim on a technical foul, so to speak, and you'll soon see that the Gemara is going to say, according to Rabbi Akiva, we're going to interrogate them. Did they know what was the situation of the chest of the victim before they put the sword in? Maybe he already had some sort of a hole in his body, you know, neck of the Mokum Saif, neck of Havi. Does Rav Shimon Gamliel believe that Rav Yekiva, based on that question, that interrogation of the Eidim, is going to let the Nidon, the Rotzeach, run amok, free, through the streets? A free person? You know, what is this, some sort of negotiation with Arab terrorists, you know, you know what I'm saying? That's not what we're dealing with. We're not letting murderers walk the street. The Mishnah says in the Masechta Sanhedrin, Machnisin Osol L'Kippa. And whatever we do with him, we do with him. So all Rabbi Akiva meant was that there's a technical here. But the deterrent of death is as profound and as meaningful as before Rabbi Akiva made his statement, because of Machnisa no Sol L'Kippa. And here the Tiferes Yisrael gives the following answer, and I want to study this answer with you. He says the following: Kevan Shehukchishu Ha'edim, that these questions are so sensitive that ultimately, and again, we're going to have a whole plug here in this Tosfos here, this major Tosfos, a long Tosfos here on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, exactly what interrogations we're going to ask and how and this and that. But at the end of the day, we're going to find some sort of discrepancy between the two Eidim. One Eid says, I checked him out and his body was this, and the other says, I didn't check him, I did. And whatever the interrogations are, the Tiferes Yisrael says, we're not going to be able to be Machnasim L'Kippa. Because the halacha machnisin osol l'kippa applies, let's say for example in Eidus Miyuchedus, you remember where we had one aid that saw from this vantage point, the other from the other, they didn't see each other. They both passed with flying colors all the chakiris and the bedikas and drishas, all the interrogations. We know that Reuven killed Shimon. In such a case, even though technically the normal process of condemnation and execution will not apply, we know what to do with it. Machnisin osol l'kippa. But says the Tiferes Yisrael, once you've interrogated the Eidim the way Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon want you to do so, above and beyond the classic standard required seven drishas and seven chakiris, in such a case, we cannot put the victim to death. We have no umdina, meaning absolute circumstantial evidence that convinces us that the Nidon deserves to die, because we found the hakhash in the Eidim. Now, Rabosa, I understand the severity of the Tiferes Yisrael's kasha, because his kasha is based on the premise that Rabbi Kiva is going to trip up these Eidim on a technical, as I said before, similar to the Eidus Miyuchedus kind of model. And if that be the case, we really have a lot of work to do to try to understand what bothers Rav Shimon Gamliel. What, there's no deterrent? For sure there's a deterrent. We're going to take the murder and we know what to do with it. So I understand the severity of the question here that the Tiferes Yisrael. But I want to ask you honestly, do you buy into his answer? That we cannot do anything to this criminal because there's a hakhash in the eid.
I don't buy into the premise. Like, it doesn't make sense that Rabbi Akiva would say, oh, we're not going to kill him, you know, that judiciously, like, oh, with a visa spezin. Instead, we're going to, like, do some backroom torture. Like, as if that's better? That's a more just system? Like, if we're...
No, John, I think you're missing the point here. The point here is, why and how does Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfin let this guy off the hook? Is it because Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfin are convincing themselves and the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, and you and I and everybody that indeed this Eidus is unreliable? They're a bunch of no good liars. Is that what Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfin are going to do? For 70 years and more, right now we're going beyond 70 years, we are not going to put anyone to death because all the Eidim in the world are liars. That's an interesting hashkaf. And we'll find out that they're liars because we're going to work very hard in our interrogations. Or is Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfin saying something totally different? What they're saying is that we have no doubt, we're not denying that Reuven killed Shimon. We have a good, solid testimony of two Eidim shared to that effect, but we can't put him to death because the Eidim, for technical reasons, are possible. And I say the following, that if you go with the first approach, then I think you're being very naive, because then you're saying to me that over the course of a lifetime, there are no murderers who committed this terrible act in front of two Eidim, and the Eidim are Kshayrim and they're testifying to... That's... But if you say the second answer, that it's technical, then we're back to the Tiferes Yisrael's very pressing problem. I don't understand Rav Shimon Gamliel's objection. Because we have a overriding principle that although we cannot actively put someone to death if there's a technical psul, but nevertheless, if there's an umdun or demuchach, we know beyond the shadow of a doubt that he is guilty of the crime, there's another way of putting him to death. Not in a direct way, but in an indirect way. We're not going to let murderers run amok, run through the streets and jeopardize the security of society. No, if that be the case, if Rabbi Akiva is on a technical, then we can activate the principle of Machnisa no solo kippah. It's a mission in Sanhedrin. We're not going to let this guy off the hook. He's going to die a kind of indirect death. You know, we're not going to actually kill him. If that be the case, what's Rav Shimon Gamliel yelling about? I don't understand what he's screaming about. And he's saying that the Tiferes Yisrael in his answer to this question, that you know why Rav Shimon Gamliel is yelling, is because we don't believe the Eidim. And if we don't believe the Eidim, ain konsin el sol kippa. And that's why Rav Shimon Gamliel is, you're telling me that never ever we're going to put a murderer to death. That's a dangerous situation. That's Rav Shimon Gamliel can't tolerate that. You've removed all the, you know, the Torah's powerful deterrent against the death penalty. And you should know, Rabosai, that in many Western countries, and in most states, I think in the United States, I'm not sure exact number, but I think it's well into the 40s, there is no death penalty. Maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe it's... anybody know the exact number? I think there are very few states. I remember when they... You know, in Massachusetts, when they, those guys... What happened when those guys... you know, the two bombers over there in the...
In Boston?
Yeah, in the race. What was it called? In the marathon. I think they said that Massachusetts, if I'm not mistaken, was one of the states... No, I don't remember anymore. But there was another case. Do you remember that horrible case? Oh, I don't even want to talk about it. Anyway, but they said in that particular state there was a capital punishment.
Then there's a guy in Sweden. Sweden's like super gentle.
Right.
And he like was a terrorist. He went to a camp and was killed like 80 children. Mm-hmm. And their maximum sentence is 20 years.
Yeah. So, you know, what do you think about these guys who are out there to destroy life? And, you know, in the worst case scenario, you give them 20 years. And what does 20 years mean? You know, after 10 years, they're on parole. And in the first 10 years, they can see their bubbies, you know, and it is... And who knows what? You know,
you see, in Sweden, it works. They have the lowest crime rate. They have the lowest recidivism.
But I'm not sure if it works all.
He was Swedish.
Yeah, maybe. But I'm not sure it works all. He's definitely was Swede. But I'm not sure if it works in all societies. The Torah, in any event, takes a very strong stand. You know, the Torah is not squeamish. The Torah says, put him to death, and that's the way it goes.
In the American situation, many of the states that have canceled the death penalty, it's not because they're trying to protect the life of a proven murderer. It's because they're afraid that the justice system is so inadequate and so not perfect that too many times innocent people ended up being put to death. And that's being proven time after time with the new evidence they have based on new technology and DNA evaluation and all
so
that.
So I'm just telling you, Alan, that the halakha doesn't work with those premises. But it's very interesting. Yeah.
I would say something else. In the case of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, I don't think you can say that over a lifespan of a Sanhedrin sitting in, you know, however many tens of years that is, it's always going to be the same scenario, that in every single case they're always going to find the Adim to be some kind of, it's still cases of that. There'll be other cases where, okay, the Adim of a certain belief, but now we want to do the principle of so there's a different situation depending on the circumstance. Then maybe Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying, if you would apply the rule all the time that we're never going to accept,
that's dangerous.
That's got to be clearly, again, as you just said, that's against
the Torah's approach. Right.
But the fact that you're going to require and insist on and demand that the justice system be implemented in as perfect way as possible with all the Jewish and Hashira, that's also one of the Torah precepts. So you got to balance these things out in the circumstances.
You're 100% correct, Alan. You know, let me just review what Alan said, because I think it's a very important point. It's all, in all likelihood, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon are not doing away with the death penalty, but they're making it extremely difficult and, shall we say, improbable that we're going to put anyone to death. They're going to work very, very hard. The language of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon is a kind of hyperbole. We have to rewrite the text a little bit here, because it can't be that lo hayah nerag adam me'olam. That would be an absolute contradiction to what the Torah says. The Torah commands us to put to death criminals, period. What Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon are saying is that we're going to up the antes and the demands, and maybe, Alan, this expresses what you say, the phenomenon in America, until we're absolutely convinced. And in order to be convinced that he's guilty as accused, we're going to go through an entire process, super duper. At the end of the day, it's going to be a rare occasion. It's not going to be very probable, very common, that we put the murderer to death or the criminal to death. And that's what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is opposed to. He doesn't want to make it so, so difficult to put the murderer to death. Let's not be so super liberal and, you know, bleeding heart and all that. That's what he said.
To be radical, this is a guy. That you're doing the two shittas that we have today are mentioned by the Mishnah, by the Tanoim as well.
Right.
This is what they're, it's an agadic thing, it's an idea of the question of the validity of capital punishment.
Right. And but Rabbi say, does have a
some
a,
say liberals say no.
Right. But Rabbi, just want to keep in mind here, you shouldn't lose the forest for the trees. There's a very concrete, practical difference in these hashkafas.
Of course, today too.
Okay. No, because sometimes when you say agadic, I get nervous because I think agadic means, you know, the different kinds of hashkafot, and some people believe this, and some people believe that.
They're expressing the
here. It's really, and to use a term from the world of law, it cuts ice, because what we're going to see is that Rabbi Akiva is going to advocate in favor of interrogations that are not on the books. Okay. These interrogations are not. And I want to add something of my own here, because my wife, when she always tells me the story that when she took psych 1.1, you know, introductory psych class in college, so in the middle of the class, did you ever hear this? I don't know if you've ever taken psych, and this is common, but anyway, when she describes it, it's really something. In the middle of the class, somebody comes in with a gun and commits murder, so to speak. I mean, it was all planned out, obviously. And then, 5 minutes later, the professor asks, one by one, what did you see?
We had that.
Right? Did you have that experiment?
I got in grade 8.
on grade 8. Or my wife had to wait till college. But every single person had a slightly different version, you know. So you begin to see where Rabbi Akiva could really, you know, succeed in what he's doing. So, like I say, it's not just the theoretical machlokas that they have.
Could it possibly be read also as because Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon could have had such strong tefillahs that no one would have been put to death during their time?
I don't think so, because the Gemara again is gonna go through great details as to what exact questions. How would Rabbi Akiva's peasant pin down the Edom and trip them up? You know, that's gonna be the sugya. All right, let's start the Gemara now. Okay, Rabosa, we did I think a pretty adequate job in the Mishnah. Again, hafokva the kulava, but whatever we did. The Gemara says the following. There seems to be a contradiction in the Mishnah itself. Because the Mishnah says that if there was a Gemar Din in one Beis Din, and the condemned man becomes a fugitive, he somehow sneaks out the back door, one flew over the cuckoo's nest, and then he comes in front, they get him in front of a Beis Din, so then we don't have to retry, and we can in that Beis Din, where he's condemned, we can just put him to death. So the Mishnah says, Lifnei Oso Beis Din. Where did we get a hold of this guy? In that very same Beis Din. So the Gemara is medayik from the Lashon HaMishnah. The Mishnah is very careful. It says, Lifnei Oso Beis Din, that judged him on the first round. Hu di ein sosrin. We don't start from scratch. Ha Lifnei Beis Din Acher, implying that if we are only able to catch him in a different Beis Din, sosrin, we have to start from the beginning and retry him. But wait a second, let's look at the Sefer. Hatani Sefer. Kol makom sheyamdu shnayim v'yomer me'idim anu es ish ploni shenigmar dino bebez din ploni uploni uploni edov hareze nerak. So this was the scenario of the Sefer. When I say the Sefer, I mean the Sefer of the Reisha, where they testified in the second Bezdin B we called it, about what they saw, the condemnation in Bezdin A. And yet, there was no need to retry him. So why did Rebbe formulate the ratio of the Mishnah that they got him back into the same Beis Din? Amar Abayi lo kash. I myself came up with a couple of answers to this question, but none of them appear in the Gemara. So I was disappointed. You know, sometimes I love to learn the Gemara's kash and then think to myself how I would answer this question. In this case, I failed miserably. Although I still think there's some validity in my thinking, but the Gemara has a whole different approach. Kan be'eretz Yisrael, kan be'chutz la'aretz. So let's see what goes on over here. There was a trial in. So let me present to you the way this Gemara's answer is understood by the Meiri. The Meiri says the following: that if he was tried in Eretz Yisrael and he runs away to Chutz La'aretz, then there has to be a retrial. If he was tried in Eretz Yisrael, I'm sorry, if he was tried in Chutz La'aretz, and now we catch him in Eretz Yisrael, then Ein Sosrin is Dino. So far so good? Again, we're not finished yet, but, okay? Says the Meiri, I don't understand something. You're telling me that in the Reisha, where we don't have to retry him, he ran from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, correct? And then you're telling me that we don't have to retry him. Why? Because he came to the same Beis Din, right? Right. The Mishnah says in the Reisha that we don't have to retry him, and the Gemara says, you know why we don't have to retry him? Because he came from his condemnation in Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. But the Mishnah says in the Reisha that he came back to the same Beis Din. So the Meiri says something which is a little bit strange, but I don't have a better answer to this question. That apparently, the members of the court in Chutz La'aretz themselves came to Eretz Yisrael. It was a pitch for Aliyah, right? And therefore, they basically uprooted themselves and reestablished themselves in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, since the condemnation took place in Chutz Laretz, and now we've grabbed onto this, you know, the collar of this criminal in Eretz Yisrael, there's no need to retry the criminal. However, if on the other hand, says the Meiri, so he says, Af bezdin shedonos so mitchila akar mimkom moshavo bechutz laretz v'over be'eretz Yisrael, then ein sol sunestima. Avin bolet bezdin acher shebe'eretz Yisrael. What if he runs from one bezdin in Eretz Yisrael to another bezdin in Eretz Yisrael, or barach me'eretz Yisrael lechutz laretz? In all those cases, then the din would be ain't sosra nisdino. So in other words, it comes out now that bear with me on the mathematics here for a minute. I think it comes out that 3 out of 4 variations is ain't sosra nisdino, and we immediately put him to death. Let's go through the 4 possibilities. If he goes from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, we have to retry him. If he goes from Chutz Laretz to Eretz Yisrael, then we have to retry him, unless it's the same Bezdin, right? It's the same Bezdin. Now, how can it be the same Bezdin? The answer is that Bezdin uprooted itself and now it finds itself in Eretz Yisrael. Correct? So the case where we retry him is going to be only one case, where he was condemned in Eretz Yisrael, and now he shows up in a Beis Din in Chutz Laretz. But if he was condemned, just one second, if he was condemned, okay, I'm sorry, I'm getting myself tripped up. You see, that's what happens when I get a little nervous. Okay, let's just get it in. Khan, the Reisha, is talking about where he leaves Chutz Laretz and he shows himself up in Eretz Yisrael. Correct? In that case, we don't have to retry him. Correct? The Reisha of the Mishnah is where he flees from Chutz Laretz and we catch him in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not listening because I have to work this out myself. That's just the way I am. I just have to get through the text. Afterwards, I'll hear you. But he says again, the Reisha is a case of someone who was tried in Chutz Laretz, and now he comes to Eretz Yisrael, right? And in such a case, what does the Mishnah say? If he came to the same Beis Din, correct? Then ain sosra nisdino. Right? But if he shows up in a different Beis Din, is sosra nisdino. So the only case of the 4 variables, I don't know if this is what I said 5 minutes ago, but let me correct myself if I didn't say this. The only case in which we're going to have to start from scratch and retry him is when he was condemned in Chutz Laretz and he shows up in Eretz Yisrael in a Beis Din, but not the same Beis Din. Okay? But in all other scenarios, we do not have to retry him. That means, if he was condemned in Eretz Yisrael and he flees to Chutz Laretz, we don't have to retry him. If he was condemned in one Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael and he flees to another Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, then we don't have to retry him. But what happens, this is what confuses me, if he flees from one Beis Din in Chutz Laretz to another Beis Din in Chutz Laretz. Does the Meiri address that case? What's your gut feeling about that case? You
don't retry
him. Let me just read it.
The only reason we retry is because it's Chutz Laretz Yisrael. The default is don't retry. You made Aliyah, you get an extra trial.
The default is don't retry, it's back to the same base.
So he says, Chutz Laretz La'aretz, Sosun as Dino. right?
Mipnei
zechusa shel Eretz Yisrael.
Exactly, there's a quality.
That somehow Eretz Yisrael will find this chus.
If you're in a, right. You get the 20 years of Cleo when you make Aliyah, and your package is extra
right.
Trial.
Right. Okay, you're being facetious, but wait a minute. Let's just get it straight.
Once you make your read out, when you've already convicted in Eretz in a Beit Din here, that's going to take priority over what a new Beit Din would potentially rule in Chutzlanz. If you were convicted in...
Well, no, what we're saying, Galen, is the absence of this chut of Eretz Yisrael brings us back to the original principle that we don't have to retry a person. When do we have to retry a person is when he has the schut of Eretz Yisrael, but that only applies if he shows up in a different Beis Din. That's what the Miri is pointing out, correct? So now let's read the Mishnah again. The Mishnah says the following. Misha nigmar dino ubarach ubalifnei oso Beis Din ain sosrin es dino. Meaning, despite the fact that you would have suggested schut Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, in this case, since he came to the same Beit Din, we neutralize the power of schut
Eretz Yisrael. Sitting in Eretz Yisrael. It's the same
Beit Din. The same Beis Din, right, in Eretz Yisrael. Correct? But in all other cases, there's no need to retry. So the only case where this chut Eretz Yisrael is where he shows up in Eretz Yisrael in a different Beit. Correct? Now let me just read the Miri again just to be absolutely sure. In Barach HaNidon Michutz La'aretz La'aretz Yisrael. Right? But it was a situation Sha'Beis Din Shedano So B'Tchila Akar Mimkomo B'Chutz La'aretz V'Over La'aretz Yisrael As I Ain Beis Din So Sur Nesdino I will Im Balifnei Beis Din Acher She'Be'aretz Yisrael Im Ba Lifnei Beis Din Acher She'Be'aretz Yisrael. In other words, he was condemned in Chutz La'aretz. Now he shows up in a different Beis Din Eretz Yisrael. So Sur Nesdino, we retrial. Im Barach Mei Eretz Yisrael L'Chutz La'aretz O toch Eretz Yisrael, o betoch Chutz La'aretz, ain so soon as did. Even though it's a different Beis Din. So what we need is, in order to force Beis Din's hand to go through an entire retrial, we need that he show up in Eretz Yisrael, he gets Chutz Eretz Yisrael, but not the same Beis Din. Good? That's the meaning. Okay, what else? Sanhedrin o Heges. Minani Mili, how do we know that Sanhedrin applies even in Chutz La'aretz? And here, the Achronim point out that there's a pasuk in Dvarim Tet Zayin that says, Shoftim v'shotrim titein lecha b'chol sharecha. What does b'chol sharecha mean? In Eretz Yisrael. So that's why the Gemara wants to know, how do you know that we should not take this pasuk literally, and that even in Chutz La'aretz is a mitzvah of establishing Sanhedrin? Tan Rabbanan, based on a pasuk in Bamidbar Lamed Hey, v'hayu ele lachem lechukas mishpat lidoroseichem. And the end of the pasuk is b'chol moshvoseichem. What does b'chol moshvoseichem teach us? Lamadnu l'sanhedrin shlo heges ba'aretz ubechutz la'aretz. Nuim came matam alon b'sharecha. We started with the pasuk shoftim v'shoftim titelcha b'sharecha. B'sharecha atam moshiv bate dinim b'chol pelach. Pelach u pelach. U b'chol ir v'ir. In other words, it's not enough to have municipal courts. You also have to have a Sanhedrin in each district. Now, usually Medina means that we divide up Eretz Yisrael into three. There's Yehuda, there's Golil, and Eivor LeYarden. I'm not sure if that's true here, but my guess is that it is. So there'll be an additional three Batei Dinim in the three Medinos. That's in addition to B'chol Ir V'Ir. But B'chutz La'aretz Atam Moshiv B'chol Pelach U'Pelach V'I Atam Moshiv B'chol Ir V'Ir. So there's no requirement in Chutz La'aretz of setting up municipal courts. All you need is district courts, or state courts, if you call it that. The Ritva says that ein chiyuv lahoshiv batei dinim b'chutzlaretz b'chol ir ela b'chol pelach. If they want to do so, they have the option of doing so, but there's no requirement. Isn't this a pella, this whole sugya? This boggles my mind. I mean, the Torah tells us, tzedek tzedek tirdof. That means that we have to guarantee a system of justice. So how many courts do I need for a system of justice? Do I need a city court, or is it sufficient to have a district court? But why in the world should there be any difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Lands? You know, sometimes I raise my hand and I say it's Gzeiras HaKasam. You know, you're talking about ritual law, and we don't know, there are rules, you know, if you learn, you know, the Sugi Paraduma, you know, you can ask me, why do I have to do this? I don't know, why do I blow shofar from Rosh Hashanah? I don't know. For my part, blow a trumpet. I don't know, it's Gzeiras HaKasam. But here we're talking about something as basic as justice. So the thought occurred to me, but I immediately rejected it, that maybe there are more Rotzchim in Eretz Yisrael? Could it be? I can't accept such. In fact, the Torah itself says that the land itself doesn't tolerate evildoers. It vomits up the criminals. So I don't know. And yet here in Eretz Yisrael, every city requires a base.
It's a better system of justice. You may get more justice in the land of Israel than outside.
But why? When the Torah says tzedek tzedek tirdof, that means that you have to guarantee justice. So tell me how you want to set up a court system that guarantees justice. You're going to tell me that in Eretz Yisrael there's one way of guaranteeing justice, and in Chutzot it's another? It just doesn't sit well with me.
I would say that, just like what you said, that the land of Israel spits out, you know, evildoers. Right. So, if you're in Chutz La'aretz, okay, you need a regular level of justice. There's a murderer, he's going to be tried, he's going to be convicted, he's going to get justice. How fast does the court need to move? U.S. Open Courts is pretty good. He'll be waiting in jail for 5 months. The trial will take 2 months.
No. So get to your point.
But in Eretz Yisrael, no, we really need to deal with justice very seriously. And no, we need to invest more resources. We need to deal with the evildoers, you know, this week. And get it done by the end of the month.
And are you saying that therefore by adding the number of courts in Israel, it's going to maybe speed up this? I'll tell you, Rabosai, and I think I may have heard this from the Rav once, and with this we'll conclude. I thought we'd finish the parak, but we'll do that next week. We'll put the schnapps back. I think I heard from the Rav, but don't quote me on this, that there are two different mitzvahs here. There's one mitzvah tzedek tzedek tirdof, and from that perspective, all we need is the higher courts. And then there's another din, another mitzvah of yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And maybe this fits in, John, with what you were saying before. But the way I heard it from the Rav is that when it comes to yishuv Eretz Yisrael, there's separate chal shem ir, a city. Is a shtick Eretz Yisrael with its own chiyuvim. And there are many halachas that apply to the cities of Eretz Yisrael, which is called B'chol Sha'arecha in the Torah's language, that engender responsibilities that are limited to the cities of Eretz Yisrael. As far as Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof is concerned, fine. Sit back in your laurels, set up a system of justice, plach and plach, and medina medina, that's fine. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's a different thing. When you settle in a city, that city has certain dinim, there's certain requirements vis-a-vis the city to set it up as one of the cities of Eretz Yisrael. And now when I settle in that city, I have a complete perfect cube of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. That's what I think I heard from the Rav. But today I have to tell you that I think it's wrong. If the Rav said it, I don't. That's why I say take it with a grain of salt, because I don't think the Rav could have said such a thing. Because the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that as far as Bnei Noach is concerned, where there's no difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, they are required to set up courts in every Pelach and in every city. According to the Rav, that the addition to Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, why would that apply to a Bnei Noach? Ben Noach would have to be the paradigm for Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof. There is no other mitzvah that you can deal with. And one of the seven mitzvahs that a Ben Noach is chayev in is Dinim. And Dinim require that he set up courts in every single city. So what's the Rav going to say about that? I don't know. Now, the Shagasari here asks this question, but not this question. He's not operating with the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. He just doesn't understand why a Ben Noach has the obligation of setting up a court system in every city, in addition to Plach Uplach, and a Ben Yisrael doesn't have that obligation in Chutzlars. Why should a Ben Yisrael in Chutzlars, asks the Shagasari, be inferior to a Ben Noach? If a Ben Noach is obligated in every city, why shouldn't the Ben Eretz Yisrael, why shouldn't the Ben Yisrael, a Jew, be obligated? That's his question. He doesn't have an answer to that question. But I think the question becomes even sharper when we deal with the Rav's framework that the Chol Ir V'Ir is a Chiv that's engendered not by Tzedek Tzedek Tirdov, not by the pursuit and guarantee of justice, but by Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Why should a Ben Noach then have to set up city courts?
That makes sense to me, because the Ben Noach is in his land. Like, for a Jew, his land, where he's supposed to be, really pursuing...
Yeah, but John, there's no mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael for a guy. I mean,
there's Yishuv Aretz.
Again, Yishuv Aretz, but that doesn't engender a separate din in an ear. The halach of ear is engendered by Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. B'chol sharecha, I mean, b'chol sharecha appears over and over again. I'll give you an example. At the end of Vayikra, there's a whole parsha called Batei Arei Choma, right? That if I sell you a piece of property in a city that's walled, so the Torah says, b'sharecha, I have a right to redeem that property within a 50-year period of time if I pay you back the money. That's Gol Es Hasod. And that's halacha in the ear. There's Kedusha Sa'ir. The sanctity of the city is guaranteed, and it's obligatory, in Eretz Yisrael. And the Rav thought that in court systems, that's part of how we organize the city in Eretz Yisrael. But that's a mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't apply in Chutzlaretz neither to a Jew nor to a non-Jew. Okay, Rebos, I will stop here. So where are we up to? I just want to make a cheshbon here. We're pretty much at the end, correct?
Yeah.
Right. We have just this last piece here about how Rabbi Akiva is going to interrogate the Eidim. I have a whole piece here from the Otzer Mefarshei Talmud in order to guarantee that we don't put the needle to death, or at least not frequently, as we said before. Right. Okay then, how many are we? Oshia Esav Mechu Baruch Esnatzel Urim Masim Yom Shoyim. I think we're.